for us to show up in the best way possible for our teams, for our employees, that we have to become the best version of ourselves in all aspects of life.
Welcome back to the show, the Ronin Mindset Podcast. My name is Steve Didier, and tonight we've got a very special guest, Sean Barnes, host of the Way of the Wolf podcast. Welcome to the show, Sean. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Steve. I'm actually really looking forward to it. Whenever you and I spoke and I heard the name of your show, I just had to get on. So I love it. I'm looking forward to it.
Same thing. When I saw the name of your show, we're in that Facebook group, I'm okay, this is the guy I got to reach out to.
Yep. Because
after kind of going through, I'm like, okay, this is going to be a good conversation. So, and then, you know, when we talked, a quick introductory call last week, mm-hmm. what really struck me about that conversation was the kind of the similar mindset that we had toward podcasting. Obviously, you are much, much further along in the process. And how many episodes do you have? Like 130?
140 this week. Yep.
Oh, damn. Okay. Yeah. But it was both of us had that attitude of like passion and purpose over profits.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That's something you don't necessarily see. So everybody, including me in my younger days, was chasing the dollar. So that's something you don't see. That really struck out to me in that conversation.
Yeah, that's one of the things that even to this day, and actually I'd say I'm seeing more and more people reaching out to me saying, hey, I can expand the reach of your show. I can show you how to monetize it. And whenever I tell them I have zero aspirations of monetizing the show, that I'm doing it truly just to help people out. Each episode costs me money to produce and publish and everything. There's a bunch of head scratching going on. We're like, wait a second. You're this far in. You're 2.5 years in, but you don't want to monetize the show. And it confuses a lot of people, but it goes back to my mission and purpose of trying to help people out.
I love it. I love it. I also love your background. That is a very professional setup.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I turned one of my spare bedrooms into a recording studio, and it's been an iterative process that I keep making tweaks and adjustments, but yeah, I geek out on this type of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, just like, because I checked out your YouTube channel prior to us getting on, and I saw the background. I was like, now I'm rethinking my own logo. How can I adapt it so it's kind of similar and I can get something? Because that's legit. I like it.
Yep. Thank you.
When you started the Way of the Wolf podcast, what was your thought process with that? Because you're corporate. We're almost not a corporate guy. We'll get into that later. But corporate guy, what was the thought process? What was the inspiration for starting the show?
Okay. The majority of my life, I was the introverted IT nerd, quiet, shy, reserved to myself. And I started thinking about a few different things. One, about 6 years ago, I stumbled into this passion and purpose of helping develop others and helping build teams and things like that. And I was trying to think, okay, how do I expand my reach beyond just the team that I'm working with right now and help others? Also, how can I get more comfortable behind a camera, behind a microphone? And a friend of mine at the gym said, hey, why don't you start a podcast? And immediately I just kind of clenched up, thought, oh no, why would I do that? And he's like, well, I just think about it. And so I spent a few weeks thinking about it and made a decision. All right, I'm going to start a show. And the next time I saw him in the gym, I walked up to him and said, hey, I decided I'm going to start a podcast. It's going to be called The Way of the Wolf. I'm going to do an episode every 2 weeks. And he's like, oh man, come on, don't be a bitch. Do a show every single week. Be consistent. It's like, oh, okay. So I did. I started doing my research, and my first few episodes, there's actually no video. It was just me recording on, I think, my cell phone audio notes or something like that. And
wow.
So I just started talking. The first 10 episodes was me talking about my story, my journey, where I'm at, who I am, and things like that. And then I started bringing guests on, and it kind of grew into this thing that could help other people learn from my lessons or learn from my mistakes, and then also help me get better in terms of public speaking, being behind a camera and a microphone. Because I do think as a leader and to become the best version of ourselves, we have to be comfortable talking to people that we've never met. You have to be comfortable sharing your story, sharing your journey, and being able to articulate your thoughts in a way that resonates with people so that they can connect with you. And once you create those connections by sharing your stories and effectively communicating, the impact that you can have on the world just gets greater and greater. And so that was really the origin behind it. And what I have also come to recognize is that being or having this show has helped me become a better conversationalist, because I was truthfully really awkward in conversations, and I'm gradually getting better. It's something that I'm still practicing, still wanting to get better at, but it's been a twofold approach of helping me grow while simultaneously hoping to help others grow.
Well, you don't really look the part of the introverted little IT nerd. You're kind of jacked, man. So,
I'm getting there, trying to be the best version of myself in all aspects of life. So I appreciate that.
That's what it's all about. I kind of came from a different position in the podcast, but it was the same sort of thing. Like a friend of mine, a guy actually has a pretty successful podcast, invited me on because he saw me online. And that was my first thing. I was like, nah, because I'd never listened to a podcast before outside of Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
I'm not an auditory guy. I'm a visual guy. I never listened to a podcast. And I'm a practiced extrovert. I'm not an introvert. I am an introvert, but I'm a practiced extrovert. I spent years bartending. I spent years in sales. I spent years. So the whole conversation, speaking in front of a camera, all that kind of stuff is that's been the least of my worries on this one.
Yep.
But what I've found, similar to you, is that there are other areas where I was lacking, and those are coming up. And, you know, I'm what? Just 20 something, low 20s episodes in. Mm-hmm. And I've already learned so much because I've been really, really fortunate in the quality of guests that I've had on and the things that you can learn and the people that you meet in terms of networking.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing.
It really is, man. And it's something that I've also come to realize that whenever I have guests come on the show, people that I've never met before specifically, my perception of them changes significantly as we get into the show. And as an example, I think I may have even talked to you about this on our previous call. I had a gentleman come on the show where all of his social media content is very comedic in nature, just as funny as they come. Whenever he came on the show, I asked him, hey, what is the topic of your content, because I think the name of his channel is Fit to Serve. And the guy's actually not in great shape, but he makes a lot of fitness content that's comedic in nature. And one of the things that he pointed out is in his life, he had went through a tremendous amount of adversity and struggled with things. But what he realized is it doesn't matter if you're in shape, out of shape, we're all fit to serve others and help others. And he does that through his gift of comedy. And so there was this online persona and perception that I had shaped of him. And once we got into the conversation, I realized, oh, wow, there is so much more depth to this guy. And I think that speaks to the importance of really getting to know people, especially those that are in your life. But if you get an opportunity to meet somebody and you have some sort of digital profile that you've built for that person, that's not always who they are. And so it just speaks to the importance of being able to get to know people and figure out what drives them and motivates them. And it's been an interesting journey for me.
I think it also speaks to the importance of long form content in terms, you know, podcasts. So everything else is, we're such a microwave society. We're 30 to 60 seconds. It's reels, it's shorts, it's stuff like that. You don't really get to know, like you were mentioning, you're probably watching a lot of reels of that guy on Facebook, comedic content and things like that. And that gives you a certain perception. Whereas we have an opportunity to sit down and have a conversation. That can change things completely.
Yeah, it really does. And that's one thing that I did not anticipate, but I've thoroughly enjoyed that aspect of podcasting and having people come on the show.
In my short tenure as a podcaster so far, it has been one of the most things. I think I told you when we were on that conversation, you know, when I was doing, you know, my previous thing, credit, and I was coaching and on sales and calls and all that all day, man, I'd be drained at the end of the day. And I'd just be like in a bad mood. And then the next morning, I wouldn't feel like getting up and getting at it, you know. And when I get off of a podcast, it's the complete opposite. I'm just juiced up, which is bad because I'm in Vietnam right now. And a lot of times I get off podcasts at 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, whoo, that was good. Like, and I can't go to sleep. So it's been interesting. I may have to get back to the Western Hemisphere at some point or get there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So what kind of, for people, I'm sure they're going to go check out your podcast, but kind of what is the concept of the Way of the Wolf?
Yeah, the focus of it is leadership, entrepreneurship, and becoming the best versions of ourselves. These are all things that are kind of core to who I am. And I do think that for us to show up in the best way possible for our teams, for our employees, that we have to become the best version of ourselves in all aspects of life. Yes, we need to learn skills around effective communication and delegation and team building and culture and things like that. But we have to be in a good headspace and have to be in a good space physically. So I have a number of guests that come on and we talk about fitness. We talk about mindset, mindfulness, and nutrition and things like that. Because if you think about who we are as humans, we can't compartmentalize, well, this is business, this is this, this is this. You can to an extent, but if you're trying to be a high performer in one aspect of life, like your business, your career, but you go out drinking and partying all the time, that's not really going to work. Maybe you can get away with it in your 20s, but once you get farther along in life, you have to start prioritizing different things, and health and fitness and wellness are things that you have to prioritize. So we blend all of that stuff together to really bring lessons in all aspects of life to the guests or the listeners.
I think you touched on something kind of important there, because with me, fitness has always been kind of the cornerstone of my life. No matter what else I was doing, it's kind of the cornerstone. I started working out when I was 14 because I was just a skinny, skinny little runt, and I was getting picked on by kids that were two grades younger than me.
Same.
So hey, you know, it may have been somewhat of a negative motivation, I guess, to start, but I haven't missed since. And 30, because I've got you by a little bit, I think. I'm 51. I'll be 52 this year.
Okay.
And I haven't missed more than a week, maybe two at most, in 37 years.
That's good.
That consistency and all of that bleeds over. I think if you keep fitness forefront, you're going to have more energy, especially as you get older. You command a different presence when you're talking to people. Somebody walks into the room and they're super fit. I mean, people are like, oh, you know, they take notice of that. And it gives you that confidence.
It does.
That really shows through no matter what you're doing.
Well, and it also speaks to the fact that if you have a fit body, people are going to respect you more, because what that also means is that discipline is important to you. And that is a very, I saw it, very respectable trait that unfortunately it seems is waning in society today. I see more and more people that lack discipline in their lives, and they espouse this victim mentality that truthfully discipline would fix for them, quite frankly. And so it is disappointing to see kind of the degradation of society and the lack of discipline and the things that are going on. But people like yourself and people like me we're trying to shift that back to, we'll say, more traditional ways of being. But discipline is something that's just vitally important in health, fitness, and all aspects of life. And it carries over, because if you have the discipline to eat healthy, to go to the gym consistently, to focus on mobility, those are going to carry over into other aspects of your life with your family, your career, your business, and things like that. So it's a skill or trait that carries over to all aspects of your life.
100%. And like you said, a fit body. You see somebody who's in shape, you can't cheat your way to that.
Can't buy your way to it either.
You got to pay your dues. Can't buy your way. You can't just pay somebody off. You got to put in the work. So when I see somebody fit, I assume that they're going to have some of those traits, like discipline and perseverance and consistency and all of those traits. And that's generally the kind of people I want to associate with.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Because I also know they're probably going to apply those traits, like if I'm looking at hiring somebody, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything like that, it carries over. So what did you, when did you start working out?
Well, I started playing sports in junior high and high school and things like that, and was pretty fit. I was still always the skinny, scrawny guy, but was pretty fast. And then I'll say, like, in college, around my early 20s, I kind of slacked off a little bit on my fitness stuff. And then by my mid-20s, I started getting back into it. And ever since then, I've stayed consistent. I'm 41 now, I'll be 42 this year. But it's just been, like you, I've never missed more than a week, aside from I broke my ankle 3 months ago, and that has taken its toll on me, not being able to train, not being able to get out there and push myself. And only the last 2 weeks have I been able to actually go out. I have a garage gym set up. I'll go out there and do some pull-ups and push-ups and like curls and dumbbell presses seated, and just do a little bit of upper body stuff. And my mental state has just gone to a much better place, as opposed to sitting on the couch all day with my foot elevated because I can't do anything. So being able to not train exacts a mental toll that I don't think many people truly understand. And it also is kind of reframed some of my thoughts around people that just never exercise. And I have to think to myself, my God, if you're just operating and walking through your life without training or eating healthy, that just becomes the norm. But it's unfortunate that people don't truly see how much they could accomplish if they would put just a little bit of effort into drinking less sodas, to cutting out some sugars, drinking a little bit of water, and just going for a walk or a bike ride. Little things like that make all the difference in the world. I think I saw a study, something like if you spend 30 minutes going on a 30-minute walk in nature, it has all sorts of positive cognitive effects in your mind. And then also there's a physical aspect of it, but this has been the longest stint of time that I've gone without training, and it's messed with me for sure.
I'm in a position right now where I'm in Southeast Asia. I've been doing Muay Thai since 1997, and my ankle, it's not like messed up to the point where I can't walk. I didn't do anything horrible. It's chronic something. I haven't got it figured out, but if I extend my foot like out, it just hurts. Like I can't kick a bag. No way. I would fall over and die. And my shoulder is all messed up. Apparently it's slightly out of the socket. So it hits. So it's been this game of working around everything, but I probably lost 5 or 6 pounds of muscle just because I can't push my upper body like I normally can. I can't train Muay Thai. So I feel like my core, you get all these things messing with your mind. I'm like, ugh.
Oh, it's extremely frustrating. And one of the things that is important is learning how to adapt. And for me, I've had to just do upper body over the past 2 weeks, but I am looking forward to being able to actually, walk. That would be a cool feeling. I've got this little knee scooter that I've scoot around on for the past few months, which is a great conversation piece. It's actually black and blue and silver, so it's on brand. I had to find something that matches my branding, so that works out well. But it's been a challenge for me, and the ability to adapt your training program based on what your body needs is also important. I train much differently now than I did 10 years ago when I was heavy into CrossFit. My body just doesn't recover the same way. So I've kind of had to shift more towards a strength and conditioning model because my focus is now, I don't care if I can deadlift 500 pounds anymore. I just want to be able to deadlift 315 for 10, 15 reps and be happy about it. I want to be strong, fit, healthy, and just live a good life. If I want to go on a vacation in Colorado, I don't want to have to worry about, oh God, I'm going to get winded if I go mountain biking for a day and just be crushed. And one thing that I will also say is when you are in shape and you focus on your fitness, again, it carries over into all aspects of life. But I went to Calgary in 2016 or so and then went out to Banff for a couple of days. Went out there mountain biking, hiking for a couple of days. And on my third day of biking, at the end of the day, I saw a CrossFit gym and I dropped into the CrossFit gym and worked out with them. And it struck me at the ability to go mountain biking all day and then go to a CrossFit box and drop in and train for an hour. And I'm sure you know how high the intensity is at CrossFit gyms. That resonated with me and kind of told me I was doing some of the right things to be able to go hiking all day, and then go train at the end of the day. Now, I was pushing myself pretty hard then, but it did feel good to just know that I had the option to go do that type of stuff.
That's pretty hardcore, because CrossFit's no joke.
It's not. Yes. It does it's
wear on your body.
Well, and ultimately I had to stop because I had low back and shoulder issues just from constantly pulling from the ground, the cleans and snatches and all that stuff. It wasn't really for me. So I don't really do that stuff anymore. I just do more traditional lifts and more functional strength and conditioning stuff.
CrossFit is tough, man. It's tough on your body. Mm-hmm. It really is. But it's the recovery that I've noticed as well, because I can drop into a Muay Thai gym if my ankle isn't hurting, and I can spar and I can hang with the 25-year-old guys and I can train with the fight team. But the biggest difference is we'll train. They all go out and pound some drinks and have a good night out of town. I'm at home with Advil and ice packs and Netflix, like, oh, my fucking body hurts.
Yeah.
It's just like, I can hang. No, I can't. Yeah. I'd like to think that I can, but it's that recovery, mm-hmm. man. It's recovery, but it's part of that adapting as you get older. And, on my end, I'm fighting Father Time, truth and nail. Do not go quietly into that good night.
Yeah.
So with the, I know, because we talked earlier, you are making some pretty big transitions right now. And which is kind of in the vein of the Ronin mindset, because you're leaving the corporate world, correct?
I am. Yeah. After over 20 years in corporate America, going out, starting my own consulting business, and it's a little bit scary, but really more exciting than anything. Because right out of college, well, I've always had this entrepreneurial spirit where I wanted to be able to build my own team and build my own company, just something that I could be proud of. And I had a few failed attempts at starting up companies right out of college. One was a computer repair company and the other was an automotive speed racing shop. Neither one of them really got any legs. And ultimately I had to pay back student loans and pay my bills. So I got a job and started doing that. But it's always been inside of me. And I've reflected back on, okay, what did I do wrong with this one? What did I do wrong with this one? And spending 20 years in corporate America, I've been blessed to have the opportunity to learn a lot around how to run a business, because there's many aspects of running a business or a successful business that are important. Just because you have a skill set doesn't mean that you also have the accompanying skills to be able to handle all your invoicing, understand your P&L, understand marketing and sales and lead generation. And, you know, there's a lot of aspects. It's not just I'm the best developer out there, so now I'm going to go create a company. There's a lot of other skills that you have to learn. And so I've been very fortunate in my role and through my career progression to get exposure to all aspects of business. And I now have a better understanding of how businesses operate and ready to go out on my own and give it one more college try, as it were.
Well, you're starting from a point of experience now.
Yes.
Because like you said, that experience in corporate America is invaluable. Because when you come out of college, or if you go to college or not, when you're just starting out and you don't have a lot of experience, you don't know all that stuff that you just mentioned. You don't know marketing. You don't know invoicing. You don't know payroll. You don't – all that is stuff that if you're paying attention while you're working – in corporate America, you can get a handle on that, how all those fit together.
So what you just said is probably one of the most important aspects of that is you have to pay attention. You have to be intentional. And I think that our education system, I don't know what it's like in the rest of the world, but especially in the Western countries, is that they're pumping out good employees is what they're doing. And they're not necessarily teaching you all of these different skills that you need to be an entrepreneur. They're teaching you how to fall in line and do what you're told and be a good employee. And that's fine. I mean, we need employees. That's just something that we definitely need. But also, even I have to think back, even whenever I was in college, had I taken classes on marketing or sales or account? Well, I did take accounting, but none of that really resonated with me because I didn't have any real world experiences to pull from. It was just lines in a textbook. Right. And so I didn't have any sort of a frame of
reference. Doesn't mean anything to you.
Exactly. I didn't have any sort of a frame of reference to operate off of. And so while, I mean, college worked out well for me, I probably in hindsight would have been better off just diving back into entrepreneurship and really going all in and then going to college later so that I would have those experiences to pull on. But it's just been, it's important for you to stay focused and be intentional about what you're doing. Now, if you don't have any aspirations to be an entrepreneur, start your own company, that stuff isn't as important. However, I think it's fair to say that everybody wants to grow in their career. Everybody wants to achieve better for themselves and for their family. In order to do that, you have to pay attention to these other aspects of business and figure out how can you learn more about it? How can you help the company be successful? And the more you know, the more likely you are to get pulled into other areas and get exposure and be able to learn and add more value to the business, which means you're more likely to climb the ladder.
But you got to pay attention.
You do.
Just showing up as a drone with your blinders on and it's not going to get you anywhere. Now, here's the real question. A lot of people, and like I never knock on anybody, like a lot of people thrive in the structure of a 9-to-5 job and all that kind of stuff. But it's not knocking anybody who does that. But there are a lot of people who say, and I hear it all the time, I've heard it through my whole entire life, oh man, I really want to do this. I want to go out and start this business, or I want to do this, or I want to do that. And then years later, they're still, I want to go do this. I want to go do that. And they never, ever do it. Now, if you truly want to, I know it wasn't easy because you had that safety net. You had a good gig. Everything was good. But to leave that behind, what kind of mindset? I know you've said you've always kind of had that entrepreneurial spirit, but what was the thing that made you do it like now?
Man. And
leave behind the safety net, leave behind the structure?
This is a great question. And because I've always had this entrepreneurial spirit inside of me, whenever I say I'm starting my consulting business, I've kind of done it, dabbled in it on and off over the past few years. Back in the downturn, because I work in oil and gas, in the downturn of 2015 and 16, I started doing a little bit on the side because I was thinking, oh man, is this job security that I think I have really there? We're laying off all these people. And I will say I've been very fortunate to have never been let go during any of the downturns in oil and gas that I've been through. And then the same thing happened during the pandemic. I thought, oh man, is this safety net really as safe as I think? Let me do a little bit of stuff on the side just to be sure. Now, through all of that time, some of my friends that are really close to me know that I've made comments. Well, one day I'm going to go out on my own. One day I'm going to go out on my own. And a few years ago, a friend of mine said,
a lot of people say that.
They do. They really do. But most of them don't really have a plan behind it. And I'm going to get into that aspect from my perspective, but I'm highly averse to risk. And I think that just comes from growing up without any money. And it's kind of this mindset of people that grow up without any money. When they get money, they hang on to it. And they're deathly afraid of doing anything to jeopardize that. And quite frankly, going out on your own, starting a company, you're not going to get paid much, if at all, for the first year or two. And I don't think people really prepare for that mentally or fiscally. And so for the past few years, all of the side jobs and little side hustle stuff that I've been doing, I haven't paid myself anything. It just goes into my company bank account. And I've been doing that intentionally because I want to build more and more and have some cash on the balance sheet to be able to transition and not stress out about cash. Because one of the things that I struggle with from a sales perspective, and my dad and brother, car salesman, obviously love them to pieces, but car salesmen can be pushy. They and nothing frustrates me more than a pushy salesperson. And so my approach to sales is more along the lines of like, hey, here's our services. If there's an opportunity to work together, great. If not, that's cool too. I'm still pushing a bunch of content that could potentially help you out. Here's my contact information. Call me if you need me. Now, whenever you have that sort of a mindset around sales, you might miss out on sales. And that's okay. That's fine. But I didn't want to be strapped for cash and have to turn into a pushy salesperson to be able to pay my bills. So I spent years saving, hoarding cash, saving money as much as possible to position myself as best as possible for this transition. Now, to answer your question around what was that trigger, in corporate America and publicly traded companies, there's some element of politics at play. I'm not going to get into the details of it, but one of the things that I struggled with was the politics. I have a very strong moral compass, and sometimes decisions would be made that I didn't necessarily agree with. And obviously, as an employee, you have to trust that the leaders of the company have the company's best interest at heart and the employee's best interest at heart. But, you know, it was just something that I struggled with. And about probably 8 or 9 months ago now, there were some decisions that are made that I just wasn't comfortable with. And I'm at a good enough place financially to go ahead and go out on my own. And also, I think maybe turning 40, I realized that I don't want to be a 60, 65-year-old consultant. That's not what I want. I want to be able to build a company. And whenever I was talking to a good friend and mentor of mine, his first response, there's nothing wrong with a 60-year-old consultant. I was like, fair. There's not, but that's not what I want to build. So I'm at a point in my life where I'm old enough to have some valuable experience to be able to bring to the table and help people out, but also young enough that if the whole thing goes down in flames, I can still go get another job and finish out and retire in my 60s and know that I gave it one last try. And if I can't make it work, then it wasn't meant to be. And that's okay. But I couldn't just spend the rest of my career in corporate America and then look back in my 60s, regret never having tried. So that was really the driver for me over the last year to truthfully figure out, okay, I have to make this work. I have to stop talking about it and actually start taking action.
That's pretty insightful, actually. What would your kind of continue along that vein? Obviously, I believe that when you get to 65, your outlook on 65 is going to be completely different. Because trust me, every time I tell anybody I'm 51, I'm like, holy shit, that sounds old. But I don't feel it. Holy God. But what would you say to somebody who is one of those people who's kind of perpetually, man, I really want to do this. Man, I really want to do this. Man, I really want to do this. But they're having trouble. What is it? What do they call it? The golden handcuffs?
You're talking about like from
having trouble leaving that security behind.
Yeah. Well, and I think this really comes down to living below your means, because this is a multifaceted challenge to overcome. And Steve, look, I'll be honest, the company that I work for, they pay me very well. And the thought of stepping away from it, I've had some conversations with my family and they're like, what in the hell are you thinking? Why are you going to step away from it? And, you know,
it's tough to walk away from
it. It is. It really is. And I've been so fortunate to have found myself in a place where the financial side of things doesn't really drive decisions in my life. My relationship with money over the years has changed to where I now view money as a tool to impact more lives. And I recognize how fortunate I am to be in that position. Now, also, it has taken a tremendous amount of work and effort and energy and being intentional about building my own skill sets so that I can create that value for a company and be compensated the way I have been. But to really start living below your means, that's going to be the first step. Now, Steve, whenever I first got into making what I'll say decent money in my early 30s, I went out and I'm a car guy. Steve, at one point I had 5 cars and a motorcycle. Just I blew all of my money just because I grew up without it. And so it was like, oh yeah, let's get this vet. Let's get that Formula, that Trans Am, that Z, like all of these different things and trucks and like, and jet skis. It's just, I wasted a lot of money. And after about 5 years or so of just splurging and spending all my money, I kind of came to this realization that these things were fun, but it wasn't fulfilling. And I started to search for more meaning in life and trying to figure out how to live a more fulfilling life. And I found that through coaching and mentoring and helping other people be successful. And whenever I shifted my focus to that, I started to sell off some of my cars. Now I still have my ZR1 and my Avalanche, and I do have some jet skis, but I sold off almost all of my cars and started to focus on that. It started living below my means, which made it very easy for me to hoard cash, save a bunch of money, start investing. And whenever I had that security blanket, you were talking about corporate America being a security blanket. The true security blanket is whenever you save your money and you're not beholden to some company. And I think that's one of the most freeing things that I've ever done in my life, is knowing that if I disagree with my boss on something, that I'm comfortable standing firm in my morals and saying, I'm not comfortable with this. I don't like this approach. And being able to push back without worrying about getting fired. Because for the past 5 years, I've had this mindset. I've been a good employee. I'm not like kicking and screaming and bucking the system. But I'm very comfortable in knowing that if I push hard enough and I get fired, that's fine. I'll go do something else. Like, I'm not too worried about it. And how many people do you know that actually live like that? Most employees are fearful because they live paycheck to paycheck and they're afraid of pushing back and standing firm, especially if they've got a boss that's an ass. Like, they're worried about their own livelihood, and as they should be. But when you craft and build a lifestyle that's below your means and you have that nest egg or that security blanket financially, man, it is incredibly freeing. And I wish more people would recognize that this whole game of keeping up with the Joneses, it's pointless because they don't care. They really don't. Follow your passion, follow your purpose in life. And, you know, if cars is your passion and purpose in life, great, cool. That's fantastic. And I'm not saying don't enjoy life, but once you start doing that, everything changes and it makes it so much easier for you to do what you want to do. So once you do that, I think this is a very long-winded way of saying, once you're comfortable financially, it makes it very easy for you to transition into doing your own thing.
Oh, for sure. You know, it's funny when you were talking about, you're like, well, I grew up with not much money. You know, you tend to hoard it. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh shit, I went the opposite way. Because I grew up with on a farm in central Minnesota, and I started making real money in real estate. I went crazy. So like you said, I had cars, I had you name it. I was spending as fast as I could make it, but I developed this confidence, like I can sell, I can do it, I can put in the work, I'll do whatever it takes, doesn't matter, I'll spend it, I'll make more. And when the crash in 08 hit, I realized that living beneath your means is something that you should aspire to.
Yep.
No matter what your situation is, because it does, it gives you that freedom. It really gives you that freedom. You have a pissing contest with your boss, whatever, and walk away. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about making rent. And I think I just saw a statistic, like 60, you know, it was in the last couple of days, last week or so. I think 68% of Americans are paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think I remember seeing a similar statistic. I think it was 65, 70%. And I've seen it, especially in oil and gas. It boggles my mind to see how much money some of these operators and engineers make, and knowing that if a downturn hits, they're going to go bankrupt in a month or two. I've seen guys that make 200,000, 300,000, sometimes 400,000 a year, and then they lose their job due to a pandemic or a downturn in oil and gas, and 3 months go by and they're bankrupt. They just live like rock stars, and it's the craziest thing. There's a guy that grew up down the street from me. He got into oil and gas, making a ton of money in 06, 07, 08-ish. And when that downturn hit, he lost everything. And then 2013 and 14 came around, making a ton of money, buying jacked up trucks. I think he had 7 motorcycles and razors and a house and a boat and all this stuff. Lost his job again, and then went bankrupt. He lost everything. All he had was one motorcycle. He was living on a neighbor's couch. And then actually, I think he filed for bankruptcy and then said, I'm never going back to oil and gas. Well, he did. 18 and 19, back into oil and gas. And then when the pandemic hit, he lost it all again. I'm like, dude, like, you've been through 3 downturns and lost everything. At what point do you actually learn and think, let me just save some of this money so that I don't end up living on a friend's couch again?
Just some. That's it.
Or maybe just pay the things off that you buy. If you're making $400,000 a year, pay cash for your house, pay cash for your truck. That way, when you lose your job, you don't have all these crazy bills that you have to worry about and all this debt. In any event, no way to live.
Yeah. I learned my lesson. I learned the hard way, because when 08 happened, I was in Vegas and I had my real estate business in Vegas, and it just went. I lost absolutely everything I spent the last 10 years building, and, you know, divorce and all that stuff. Yeah. So it was a wake up call for sure. But that's all right. So what is the consulting business that you are opening? Is it in the IT field?
Well, actually,
I would imagine.
Yes. One of the verticals that we have is IT, but about 6 years ago, I had the opportunity to step in and start leading human resources on top of IT. And then 3 years ago, safety and transportation and ESG. And so I'm very fortunate to have experience in a lot of different functional domains. So the focus of our consulting business is people, processes, and technology. All businesses have people problems. So HR, organizational development, leadership development, building culture and teams and strong leaders. That's kind of one of the verticals that we focus in. Another is going to be process improvement, operational excellence, supply chain optimization, things like that. And then there's the IT, digital strategy, digital transformation, cybersecurity side of things. So those are the 3 pillars that we operate within. And one of the things that I've found is our differentiator is, yes, we will come in and do your ERP implementation, but also we will coach, guide, build, and develop and mentor your team along the way. And so our clients don't have to find a tech firm to go do this project and then also find a leadership development company to coach and mentor the team. We blend those aspects together. And that's the value prop. And in all my research, there are so few companies that can actually execute on those 2 levels. And because it is blending my 2 passions in life, one being technology and the other being developing people and teams, it works well for us. And once we get in the door, I'm seeing that there's this element of stickiness, because I like to think that we perform at a very high level, but throughout the entire project, we're coaching and building their team and creating a stronger culture within their organization. So they tend to want to keep us around longer. But ultimately, my goal is to be able to get in, build the team, help them perform on their own, and then step away and then go help another client or another team. And as I've had conversations with other consulting firm owners, they're like, well, you're working yourself out of a job. I said, yeah, that's the point. I don't want to land a client and then just be there indefinitely and then have revenue coming in for 10 years, because if that's the case, we're truly not making the impact that I want to make. I want to be able to come in, build these teams, help them be successful, and then move on. And I think that's how you have a greater impact in the world.
That sounds like a really smart way of approaching that problem, combining those 2 things. With the culture, that's something that particularly interests me in terms of a company. What would you say is the most important aspect in creating a I don't even know what the term would be, an effective culture within a corporation or within a company.
I think servant leadership is probably the most important aspect to focus on. Because if you're a servant leader, one could deduce that you don't have a massive ego. I think ego is one of the biggest downfalls of a lot of businesses and corporations. You end up getting some manager or executive with a head so big they can barely walk through the door, and they're not making decisions that are best for the business. They're making decisions that are best for them. Also, as a servant leader, your focus is likely going to be serving your team. By definition, that's really what it is. But building them, empowering them, giving them the skills necessary to be successful. And there's a quote that I heard, I can't recall where I heard it from off the top of my head, but it's build your people and let your people build the business. I mean, that's the way to build a strong culture, quite frankly, because as me, as one man, I can't do everything on my own. There's no possible way I could know all the ins and outs and the nuances. Yes, I strive to know as much as possible so that I can make informed decisions, but ultimately, I hire people that are much better than I am and let them run. And when you come to the table and lead your business or your team in that way, those high performers are going to rise to the top, and they're going to build your team, and they're going to build your business for you. So I think that did that answer your question? I think it did.
It really does. It really does. I don't have much experience in the corporate world at all. I've had some jobs and I was in the military, but very few things bug me more than those people in management or leadership positions who actively undermine the people under them because their ego, they're afraid of their position, or they want somebody outshining them.
Yeah.
That bugs the shit out of me. And that's that to me. If you want to talk about a toxic company culture, that would be it, because you're not empowering anybody at that point.
You're not. No. And as you were talking through that, I'm thinking about one boss specifically that I had that was friends with a high ranking executive. And this guy, he was useless. Oh man, he was completely useless. And he would intentionally inject himself between other executives, even though he had nothing to add to the conversation. But everything that I did, I had to run through him so that he could then take to other people. And me, as an employee, I'm thinking, what the hell? You know, I'm doing all this work. Our teams are doing all this work. And then this guy is going to run it up to the top and take credit for all of it. And it's frustrating. Whereas with my team, mm-hmm. I put them in front of the executives. I'm thinking through a guy that's right. worked with me for over a decade, and he has grown by leaps and bounds, just always continues to impress me. And I'm putting him in front of the board, putting him in front of the audit committee, because I want everybody to know he and his team are the ones that are doing this. Yes, he reports to me, right. but quite frankly, he and his team are doing all the work. So I don't want to be the one to step in and take credit for all of the work that he's doing. And plus, giving him that exposure gives him the opportunity to learn how to have uncomfortable conversation and overcome being nervous talking to other executives, being nervous mm-hmm. talking to board members. I'm comfortable in those arenas because I've been fortunate to be able to do that on a number of occasions, but he hadn't. And so giving him right. that opportunity to right. go out there and grow and experience it, yes, it can be a little bit nerve-wracking in the beginning, but also helps him grow. And that needs to be the approach of more yeah. leaders. If you know, okay, here's another quote. All ships rise with the tide. So if you focus on building yeah. the people in your team, yes, you are inevitably going to rise with them. And I think I've espoused yeah. that in my career and been able to showcase that one of the primary reasons I was able to successfully branch over from IT to IT and HR and then safety and transportation, the PMO, and take on all these additional functional domains is because I built those teams up as much as possible so that they could run on their own. Because me, again, as one man, right. there's no way I could lead all of these functional domains if I was down in the weeds in every single one of them. But what I've done over the past 6 years, 10 years, is built a strong leader of IT, and then a strong leader of HR, and then a strong leader of safety and transportation. And they'll report into me, and then I can just hop through each of these whenever there's big issues or challenges. And ultimately, I don't solve the problem. I leave breadcrumbs and coach them on how to solve the problem.
Well, that speaks to your character and your lack of insecurity, because so many of these people are just weak in leadership position. If they see somebody else doing good, they look at it as a threat.
Yep.
And if you've got that mindset, they probably are, because you're going to lose out. Mm-hmm. But that kind of experience that you're describing is going to become very handy when building your own teams for your own company.
Yep. That's what I'm hoping.
Well, I've got a hunch you're going to do all right, I think. I know we've talked, this is going to get off, taking a tangent here, but you still, you said when we talked earlier, you mentor people who are starting podcasts occasionally.
I do.
Are you still planning on doing that kind of, as kind of a side passion thing, or are you kind of letting that go as you put all your focus on your business?
Yeah, I'm going to keep doing that. And it's just something that, before I invest too heavily, I like to have a conversation with a person and better understand what their motivators are for starting a podcast. And if in the conversation, their answer is, oh, I want to make a bunch of money and travel the world. Okay, well, go watch this video that I created on how to start a podcast. And, you know, let me know if you have any questions. However, if it's someone's passion and purpose and they're wanting to do something great and help others, I'm going to invest more time in them. And I don't charge people for that. It's usually just like a call or two here and there, give them some tips and pointers and talk them through some stuff. And all things related to the podcast, like you and I have discussed, I don't monetize the show, never going to monetize the show. I just want to help people out. And I think year to date, I've had about 6 people that I've worked with on helping them launch podcasts. And then also, if you look at the timeline, during the first year of the pandemic, podcast creation exploded by some ridiculous amount. And then now, I think 70%, there's been a 70% decline in new podcast creation. And I think that comes from people recognizing, okay, you're not going to get out there with 10, 20 episodes and make $1 million. It's just not going to happen. You've got to put in the reps. It's going to take time for you to hone your craft, for you to get better. And so, yeah, it's been interesting. I just want to make sure that people are doing it for the right reasons.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think a lot of people go into, not just podcasts, but a lot of businesses with the idea of things are going to kick off and they're going to be making money in 3 months or 6 months. It's that kind of microwave society that we have. Everybody wants everything right now. And, you know, obviously I'm a little bit different than you in that I do want to monetize the podcast eventually. That's not my main focus. Mm-hmm. But having another revenue stream obviously would be very attractive. But being my age and my experience level, I had no illusions of it making any money whatsoever in the first year, 2, 3. So I'm very, very comfortable with just doing it. I know if I do it, like you said, I hone my craft, I get good at all the different aspects of it. And for me, it was a learning experience, you know, just, okay, equipment. Okay. And combined with the fact that I was going to be traveling on top of it, I had to get, you know, equipment that would be quality, but mobile. I just actually got this.
Oh, nice. There you go.
Rode microphone. Yeah. It's like magnetic and it breaks down. So
perfect.
But apparently it's a pretty quality microphone. So, I got that, and then I got the Elgato Facecam Pro 4K video. And so I got all this stuff specifically so that I could be more or less mobile, but still have a pretty quality in terms of production.
Yeah.
And I got lights, and I didn't, I knew when I came over to, you know, I left the US, I was in Europe for a while, and now I'm in Asia, but I knew that even with an adapter, I don't know how much you've traveled, but you know, certain things you plug in, like you plug in an electric razor, if you got an adapter to the outlet, it's going to burn out in like 2 seconds.
Really?
Because it's all 220 instead of 110.
Okay.
So even if you've got the adapter, You know, so I knew that, but I didn't realize that applied to lighting. So I brought all my lighting with the diffusers and all that, you know, I could pack down. I got an extra long suitcase to put it in. I plugged everything in, was setting it up, and there was zzz, 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 fried off.
That was an expensive lesson to learn.
Yeah. So I've been trying to piece things together on the road and, you know, take advantage of natural light when I can, but I do podcasts at night most of the time. But, you know, it's been a very interesting learning curve, you know, because now I'm getting into the editing and the distribution and the marketing and all that kind of stuff. But it's been really rewarding.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm it's just something that makes me smile. It gives me energy. I'm going to get off here and be like, woo, yeah, again. But
yep.
it's all good. I think if somebody really has a passion for it and likes what they're doing and they do it, whether they're going to get paid or not, those are probably the people that are going to have the most success.
I would agree. Yeah.
In terms of podcasting.
I would agree. And one thing that I will say is I have ideas for another show that will likely not be audio. It will be YouTube, probably not so much short form or quite as long as some of my shows, but because I'm such a car nut, I want to create another channel that's focused on cars, exotics, and fast cars and things like that, and be able to have interviews and conversations with the owners or the entrepreneurs or, you know, whoever they are. And that channel I will probably monetize, because to your point of having multiple revenue streams, I think that is important to feed into that ability to live a comfortable lifestyle. And so it's not that I'm against people monetizing the show. It's just for me and the Way of the Wolf, the focus is really just to try to help people out. And the fact that I cannot stand commercials, there are very few things that annoy me more than commercials. And so the thought of subjecting my listeners to a commercial doesn't work well with me. But on my other channel, my car channel, I'm going to do that.
That's a different story.
Yeah.
What kind of cars do you tend toward? I heard you mention ZR1s and Transams and stuff like that. Is that kind of, you're like a muscle car guy?
Or I would say the majority of my life, I've been kind of a muscle car guy. I've got a C6 ZR1. It's a heads cam car and it's a lot of fun. It was kind of one of those things that it was a dream car of mine. And once I was finally able to save up and afford it, actually, I had a supercharged Pontiac G8 and a heads and cam C5 Z06, and I sold both of those to put a down payment on my ZR1 just to be able to get that dream car. And so I still have that car to this day. Yeah. I love it. And so I have a soft spot in my heart for Corvettes. The new C8 Z06 is, man. I'm going to have one of those one day as well. But I also have an appreciation for the exotics, the Lamborghinis, the McLarens, and things like that. So I'm thinking any sort of a fast and or well-built car and exotics will be a focus of the channel that I end up building. I've got to focus on building my business up first before I put a ton of energy and effort into that. But that's something that I'm looking forward to. And then also, you think about it from a networking perspective. If you've got a big channel and you have the opportunity to meet with entrepreneurs and executives that have exotics, you start having striking up conversations, you can use that to drive business to your company. As I'm having conversations with an entrepreneur talking about cars, hey, what do you do? This is what we do. Oh, actually, I've got a problem over here. We can't seem to get technology right to save our lives. Oh, I can help out with that type of thing. So from a networking perspective, there's a lot of interconnects that can flow together and help you out.
Oh, for sure. And there's that old saying, your network is your net worth.
Yeah. Yep.
And that opens up, you know, when you get into, you know, especially the exotic world. I haven't dipped my toes too much in the exotic world. I had a Maserati Quattroporte. SQ4.
Sounds so good.
Loved it. It was amazing. I loved it. Prior to that, you know, I'd had a lot of Beamers and Benzes, but when I was growing up, I was muscle car guy.
Yeah.
Muscle car. I had Cobra 2, I had a 71 Mach 1, you know, I had some neat cars, but as I've gotten older, yeah, my tastes have kind of trended more toward the exotics. And that's why my one issue with the new Corvette is it's like, they're trying way too hard to be a McLaren at this point.
Yeah, but is that a bad thing?
In my opinion.
I mean, okay, that's fair. That is fair, but when, like, oh, that flat plane crank engine that they've got in the new C8 Z06s revving to 8,600 RPM and a muscle car 8,600 RPM. That's pretty wild.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine. He's a big Corvette guy. And, I love McLaren's.
Yep.
720S is a badass car. But, I was like, you know, I'm kind of disappointed in Corvette. I thought they'd try and do something unique. I mean, Corvette is such an iconic brand in the US.
It is.
But, you know, it's kind of like the Chrysler 300 trying to be a Bentley.
Yeah, but you want to talk about unique. Have you heard about the E-Ray? It's a hybrid?
No.
So the E-Ray, it has the base C8 engine in it, the 6.2 liter or whatever it is. And then also it has an electric motor, like a 200 horsepower electric motor in the front. And so it's an all-wheel drive Corvette, which is pretty impressive. Wow. 0 to 60 is insane on it. And so what I'm thinking is it's only a matter of time before either the ZR1 or the Zora comes out, where they've got the flat plane crank that's high revving, possibly some sort of turbo supercharger setup, and the electric motor so that it's all-wheel drive. That's going to be a wild machine. If it comes out, I can see them putting all these pieces together. They've got the C8 Z06 with that high revving flat plane crank engine. And then they've got the E-Ray that's all wheel drive. So they're, I would imagine they're cooking something up that's pretty serious. And if not, they're doing something wrong.
I understand the performance on electric vehicles. I just don't like them.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and that's where the hybrid comes into place. You look at like the McLaren P1 and stuff like, and some of these other hybrid exotic cars, you get all the benefits of that instant torque, that crazy amount of torque, but then also you've got the sound of the high revving exotic engine. So, and as much as I think the Tesla Roadster 2, if it ever comes out, is probably one of the best looking cars I've ever seen in my life. The fact that it's still electric, even though it's 0 to 60 is less than 2 seconds. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's insane. Just
without that engine, that noise, it's like, ooh, I don't know.
Yeah. I heard Ferrari, and I like some Ferraris, but just as a company and the direction they've been taking lately, I haven't kind of cheapened it out on things. But they also came out and said they will never do an electric car.
Mm-hmm.
They're staying 100% combustion engine. So I was like, you're trying to get me back. It might work.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But,
well, hey, let me know when that, I know it's a ways down the way. Let me know when that podcast comes out. That's probably something I can get into. I can talk cars all day long.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting about that is I've actually recorded the first two episodes. I just haven't published them because I started recording them right before I broke my ankle. And going to car shows, meeting with people, and I can't drive my ZR1 right now because it's a manual. So it's like, okay, I've got the first two episodes actually edited and ready to push up, but I haven't done anything with it because I don't want to launch two shows and then not be able to do anything for a while. So but I will definitely let you know once I ramp that back up.
That'd be good stuff. Well, where can people contact you if business owners listen to this and they're looking at an IT and all those other services that you provide, the three different verticals? How can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, I appreciate that. WSS Solutions is probably the best place. You can find me on LinkedIn/Sean Barnes. It's another good area to contact me. And most of my socials are the_Sean Barnes, whether that's Instagram or TikTok. I don't really do a whole lot on most of those. I spend most of my time on LinkedIn. And then also thewaythewolf.com, and then search The Way the Wolf on YouTube. So a bunch of different avenues to contact me, and any of those will work.
Excellent. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on, man. I know we've been busy. We've got a little, you know, with all these projects you got going on. So taking the time out to jump on really means a lot to me. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Had a great time. I got to say how much I love your logo, the Ronin Mindset. I've been sitting here looking at it while we're recording. That is just sick. I love it.
Oh, good. I like that. You know what? I actually had an artist in Spain. I commissioned him to draw it out. I thought it turned out pretty good.
Yep.
I think I'm just going to roll with it. I've been playing with some other stuff. I pulled out some AI art and different things, and it looks really cool, but I think I'm just going to roll with this one as is.
Yep. I think you should.
All right. Well, Ben has decided. I'm rolling with this one. I'll let my guys know.